Hello, this is Mark Peacock, and welcome to the Travel Commons Podcast. This is Travel Commons Podcast number 110, recorded Tuesday, August 12th, 2014. This is the podcast giving the voice of the traveler. It's more about the journey than the destination. Two topics on this edition of the Travel Commons Podcast: regional jets are ruining my life, and visa hassles. Coming to you today from the Sheraton Hotel on Canal Street in New Orleans. I have a room looking over the French Quarter. It's a big convention hotel, not my usual choice, but the price is good. It has a great gym, and I'm about five stays away from making Starwood Platinum, so what the heck. I'm back to my usual commute, Chicago to New Orleans, after taking a quick jaunt out to L.A. last week. It is that time of the year on the Gulf Coast when the weather gets a bit monotonous, high of 91 degrees with a chance of afternoon thunderstorms, repeat until Labor Day. But the thunderstorms this year are tending to be earlier than last year, when they seem to roll in about 4:30, right at about the time when the inbound plane for my flight back to Chicago would be scheduled to arrive. And while my flights home still aren't arriving exactly on time, because, of course, I am flying into O'Hare, I haven't hit the big sort of 2 to 4 hour downpour delays that I would get last year. I'm not killing as much time in the airport bars, which makes me appreciate the fact that in New Orleans Airport, I can take my beer right up to the gate. Following up, flying through LAX last week reminded me of what a dump that airport is, or I guess I should say key parts of it. Flying out of there last Thursday morning, it took me a half hour in the Hertz bus to get to the United Terminal, P7, because of access road traffic, which of course is driven by LAX's unique concept of a bunch of little terminals arranged in a U around short-term parking garages. Now, that's no problem if you're flying Southwest in P1. I mean, it's really lousy if you're going out American in P5 or United in P6 or P7. Annoying, but it gets really dumpy when you get inside. There's just not enough room in each of these little terminals to properly handle post-9/11 security. So small security stations are dotted all over the terminals with lines snaking down the corridors. I don't know, given that LAX is a major gateway in international traffic from Asia, I mean, I think it's fair to compare LAX to Singapore and Beijing. Much newer airports, yes, but I got to tell you, the LAX experience ends up looking like the fourth circle of hell comparatively. I mean, this can't be a great thing for the U.S. tourism industry. In the last episode, I updated my thoughts on using Twitter as a concierge service, or at least, you know, another way into airlines customer service groups. A couple of weeks back, the Wall Street Journal had a good article about airlines' use of Twitter. They had an interesting graphic showing the difference in response times between airlines. American Airlines was on top, responding to 80% of customer queries within 15 minutes and 99% within an hour. Now, KLM, which has made a big push into social media, was much lower, responding to only 12% within 15 minutes, only 64% within an hour. It took them a full day to get up to 99%. Now, of course, we talked about last time, it's one thing to quickly press the button on a canned response like United's ubiquitous, "Nobody dislikes delays more than us." It's a whole nother thing to do something meaningful and respond in a meaningful way. Anyhow, check out the detailed show notes on the Travel Commons website for a link to that Wall Street Journal article. Also, in the last episode, I mentioned my big technology switch from my iPhone 5 to an HTC One. Now, the main reason for the switch was battery life. I just got tired of being psychotic about battery life, stalking airport gate areas for an outlet so I could top off my battery before getting on the plane. Last month, Samsung Mobile captured this hassle perfectly in a video about what they called wall huggers. It's on YouTube. I'll also put a link to that in the show notes. Check it out. It's painfully close to my reality with the iPhone, but not so much with the HTC One. I got to tell you, the battery life on this thing is great, even with the larger screen. Now, one thing that has bitten me, though, with this change over to Android has been the American Airlines app on Android. Now, I always use the phone apps for boarding passes. I mean, it's one less piece of paper to keep track of, one less line to stand in if I, you know, didn't have time to print it at home or couldn't find a printer at the client. Now, I've never had a problem with these phone apps until a couple of months ago. I was boarding a flight to New Orleans, put my phone on the reader, heard the beep, the gate agent waves me through, and I sat in my seat. A bit later, during the boarding process, I looked at my screen again. I saw that the app had refreshed and no longer showed my seat number on the boarding pass. You know, that's probably not a good thing, I thought. And I was right. Somehow, my boarding must not have registered. And so, 10 minutes before the flight, they flushed me as a no-show and gave my seat to a standby passenger. Unfortunately for her, I was in my seat, but because I didn't have a paper boarding pass, I couldn't prove that it was my seat. Now, lucky for me, the gate agent remembered me. It was a small regional jet, and she said, "Oh, this happens a lot." And I kept my seat, because remember, possession is 9/10 of the law, but the flight was delayed, I don't know, about 15 minutes while they figured it all out. Now, I never had that happen with American's iPhone app, but, you know, I don't know. Then again, it hasn't happened since on the Android app. Maybe they fixed it in, you know, one of those updates they pushed out. But I usually grab a paper boarding pass on American now when I have the time. Now, I don't know about you, but I haven't, you know, talking about sitting in a seat during boarding, I mean, or even during takeoff, I haven't looked at a SkyMall or any of those other seat back pocket air magazines since the FAA allowed the use of tablets and smartphones during takeoffs and landings. I mean, I always have a book or two on my tablet. Right now, I'm pounding through The War That Ended Peace, Margaret Macmillan's History of the Lead Up to World War One. I also download the daily edition of the Chicago Tribune. They have an HTML5 web app that shows you each page of the physical paper, and then you tap on the article that you want to read. The app is pretty good. Sometimes it's a bit fiddly, but it does let you download content for offline reading. So, you know, I get up in the morning, I can download the paper and then read it on the flight out. It's really perfect for a flight. The Wall Street Journal's Android app used to do the same thing, so I'd read that too. But earlier this year, they upgraded the app and took away the ability to download the day's paper. I'm still trying to think about how that qualified as an upgrade. Now, also flying over the past couple of weeks, I don't know, maybe it was on a Thursday, a throwback Thursday, but I saw a guy come onto a plane with a hanging suit bag. I mean, wow. I thought to myself, that was a throwback. I mean, you know, even the flight attendant looked at the guy kind of funny when he asked to hang it in the front closet, which, you know, was a typical thing in the 90s. You'd angle for early boarding so that you had a chance for the hanging space in the front closet. You'd see guys pushing all the bags to one end so they could fit theirs in. Really, you know, toward the end, not even really needing to hang it. It would just stay up just from the pressure of all the other bags. Now, the whole business casual trend has really expanded this fight, moving it out of, you know, the front galley to the entire plane aisle with rolling bags. I mean, I can't remember last time I used a hanging bag. I have my cleaners fold my shirts so they're easy to pack. And then I use those shirts with their cardboard inserts to cushion the folds of my slack so they don't wrinkle in my bag. I mean, even on those rare occasions anymore when I actually have to wear a suit, I fold it and put it in my rolling bag. I mean, it's certainly a lot easier on the shoulders and the back. And it's also a lot less awkward. I mean, I could never figure out a really good way to carry gym shoes in my hanging bag. And hey, if you have any travel experiences, be they packing, be they technology, be they, I don't know, just general observations, thoughts, questions, a story, a comment, a travel tip, the voice of the traveler, send it along. The email address, as always, comments, COMMENTS, at travelcommons.com. You can use your smartphone to record and send in an audio comment, send a Twitter message to M. Peacock, post your thoughts on the Travel Commons Facebook page, or go old school, speaking of the 90s, and post your thoughts on the website at travelcommons.com. The first topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is Regional Jets Are Ruining My Life. Now, one Wednesday afternoon in June, I had a particularly difficult time getting from Memphis to New Orleans. First, I felt my phone vibrate with multiple text messages while I was gassing up my rental car at a particularly dicey gas station just north of the Memphis airport. I had a pretty good idea what was up. United and TripIt were simultaneously notifying me that my flight was canceled. I got on the phone to Amex. They were able to jam me onto a full U.S. air flight to Charlotte with a connection back to New Orleans. Bit of a zigzag, but okay. So I returned my rental car, went up to the ticket counter, and just as I pulled my boarding pass out of the kiosk, I saw them update my flight with a 2-hour maintenance delay, which would mean I'd miss my connection. So I went back up to the desk. There were two agents, one from US Air, one from American. I guess I was seeing the new American Airlines form right in front of me. They bang on their terminal for a couple of minutes and come up with a solution. They said, hey, look, we'll put you on first class to DFW, where you'll then connect to a flight to New Orleans. Hey, this is great. I mean, better routing with an upgrade to boot. So I get to the gate, actually, and then a colleague called me. And while we were talking, I see them post a 2-hour delay, of course, weather in Texas, which means I'd have 15 minutes for my connection if everything worked perfectly, which it wasn't going to, because a delay with a round number like that, 2 hours, means in reality they have no idea when the plane will actually leave. That's it, I said. I give up. Three airlines fail me in the span of 60 minutes. I can take a hint. I was not meant to fly to New Orleans today. However, I did need to get there. So I fired up Google Maps, 5.5-hour drive. You know, fine. I got nothing else going on tonight. So I load up the Hertz app, book a car, walk back out of the terminal. So now I got a car. I drive, rather than getting right on the road, I drive to downtown Memphis, over to the riverfront, and get a decent dinner. I mean, the food quality in the Memphis airport, like the flight selection, has cratered since Delta shut down its hub operation there. And while I'm sitting at the bar eating, I get a text from American. The DFW flight is canceled. Jeez, there's a surprise. Now, the drive from Memphis to New Orleans is pretty simple, pretty straightforward, and pretty dull. I-55 south through Mississippi into Louisiana until it dead ends at I-10. Take a left and you're in New Orleans. At least that was the plan. South of Jackson, traffic comes to a complete halt. People are getting out of their cars, which is never a good sign. I get out of mine, I peer around an 18-wheeler and see a 10-foot column of flame. This is definitely not a good sign. Now, I-55 here is two lanes each way with a narrow shoulder, and they were doing construction on top of it. They were just not going to be able to squeeze us past that mess. Eventually, after making, I don't know, an 8-10 point turn, I join a line of cars that's heading back north along the shoulder, sort of one tire on the pavement, one tire in the wet red clay. About 10 minutes, I get to a gravel crossover that I don't think will bottom out my rental Ford. I hit the frontage road, bypass the burning car, get back on a now empty I-55 south, and eventually pull into my hotel at 2 a.m. Another glorious day of travel that I am sure will inspire envy in all my Facebook friends. Now, I got to tell you, Memphis seems to be, in my experience, or my recent experience, an extreme example. A woman on my project is commuting weekly from New York, and she has yet to have an on-time, no-drama journey. Indeed, I think she's spent a Thursday night in every Midwest hub city trying to get home. But as airlines close hub operations in these mid-sized cities like Memphis and Cleveland, and then they replace that mainline service with regional jets from smaller operators that we've never heard of, ExpressJet or Endeavor Air, getting to and from these cities just sucks. I mean, at first, I thought it was a United problem. I mean, after all, they'd canceled my flight down to Memphis the day before. Then they canceled this flight out of Memphis. And then the next week, they delayed my flight to Columbus, Ohio, 2 hours because, well, the flight before it was late getting off the gate. And then once our plane got to the gate, it needed to have a wheel bearing on the nose wheel replaced before it could travel on. I mean, at some point, why does United even bother posting actual departure and arrival times? I mean, really, why not just post an AM or a PM and just shoot for that? I mean, it's really not that far off from what they're doing now. But then, as I looked at the flights that were really screwing up my life, they weren't the main United or American or Delta flights. They were the regional jets. I mean, my United flights to and from LAX last week were fine. But if I'd been flying a regional jet, I would have had a real problem on the return leg. The original plane had a mechanical issue. I mean, remember, this is United. But they were able to get a replacement. So we ended up leaving LAX on time and even got into O'Hare early. Now, if I had been, on United Express by, say, I don't know, GoJet, I would have been scrambling after yet another canceled flight because they wouldn't have been able to find a spare jet. Now, I'm 5,000 miles away from hitting 1 million miles on United. I've got another, 2.5 million on American. But sitting at the bar that night in Memphis, having dinner before that drive down to New Orleans, I just hit Twitter out of pure frustration, said, "Really, United? Two canceled flights in 2 days. I'll never hit 1 million miles when you cancel every flight I'm on." To which, of course, they then press the button on reply number, I don't know, reply number 76. "No one dislikes flight cancellations more than we do. Do you need help with rebooking? Thanks." My response the next morning: "Hey, unless you too had to drive 5 hours to get to your destination at 2 a.m., you can't hate flight cancellations more than me." No response. Except from Dan, a longtime Travel Commons listener who chimed in, "Hey, sounds like a upcoming podcast topic." Indeed it is, Dan. Some good just had to come from it. The second topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is visa hassles. Now, over the past couple episodes, I've been talking about my Asian travels to India and China, which has forced me to become knowledgeable about something that doesn't often affect U.S. travelers, and that would be visas. When U.S. travelers decide to cross their border, if they have a passport, they're typically good to go. When I checked Wikipedia yesterday, U.S. passport holders can visit 174 countries without having to buy a visa in advance. This is tied at the top of the travel freedom ranking with Germany, Sweden, the U.K., and Finland. But this seemed to be the year of visas for me. My son doing a semester abroad in China, then us visiting him in the spring, then me going to India on a business trip a couple of months ago. I mean, I just managed to skip out of another trip to China that was supposed to happen this week. It was going to be business this time, but I tell you, I wasn't going to go after another visa. I figured I'd risk it since my tourist visa is valid until next spring. Now, if you live in a major city, New York, DC, LA, Chicago, sometimes San Francisco, it's not too bad because most of the big visa-requiring countries have consulates in those cities. I mean, otherwise, you end up mailing your passport away or paying extra, and it's not cheap, for courier service. And then you're paying to fly to one of the consulates for an interview if you don't have a plain vanilla visa application. Kind of like anyone of Pakistani descent applying for an Indian visa. But even when you're able to walk into the consulates like I can do in Chicago, it's not always so straightforward. I mean, research is key, as you would imagine. I mean, you got to hit the consulate website, know their hours, what paperwork they require. Our visit for my son's Chinese student visa was, I mean, it went amazingly smooth. We had all the paperwork, had it organized, knew the consulate closed for lunch, so we showed up early. Boom, 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 we were in and out. 30 minutes. 4 days later, we went back, paid, picked up his passport with the visa. It was very smooth. Getting the visa for our visit to Beijing in March, though, was less smooth. There was a little hiccup in the application. Their website had said we needed proof of a flight and hotel reservation. I had that, so I had it all printed out, organized, but what wasn't clear on the website was that I needed a copy for each visa. So I'd printed out one copy of the hotel reservation for the one room that the three of us were staying in. Turns out I needed three copies, one for each application. I don't think I was the first one who's made that mistake, though. The lady pointed me over to the copy machine about 10 feet away. Luckily, I had a pocket full of change. Now, picking them up was a bit more of a hassle. First, because it was spring break season, there were a number of teachers picking up batches of passports for school trips. I mean, I think the guy two spots in front of me had like, I don't know, 50 passports. A minor inconvenience, but it's no big deal until their credit card machine broke. Now, the Chinese consulate, their website was adamant. No personal checks, no cash accepted, just credit cards or cashier's checks. And really, how many people know where to get a cashier's check anymore? So everything came to a complete screeching halt. Finally, one of the women behind the window popped out and said, "Hey, we'll take cash if you have it." Now, I didn't bring any because, the visas are $140 a head, $420 for three of us. But I look at my watch, it's just about closing time. I ask the guard, "Hey, will you let me back in if I make a run down to the ATM for some cash?" He said, "Yeah, make it quick." So I sprint down, round the corner, tap out the cash machine, sprint back up. The guard lets me in even though he had locked the doors for the day. Everybody's sort of milling around, not knowing what to do. I mean, the guy who was immediately in front of me was there to pick up 10 visas. I mean, it was no way he was coming up with 1,400 bucks in cash quickly. I kind of politely thread my way up to the window. "Cash," I ask, kind of showing that my fresh stack of ATM 20s. She counted them out twice, gives me my passports, and I'm on my way. Now, that was nothing, though, compared to the complete cluster that was the Indian visa process, which was a real surprise to me because 4 years ago, when I went for my last Indian visa, it was just the pinnacle of efficiency. I dropped everything off at 8 a.m., and at 5 p.m., I received a text on my phone that my passport was ready for pickup. I mean, impressive. Phenomenal. I used to rave about it. I mean, it was great. Not so much anymore. But based on last time, I thought that this would be simple. I would put all my documents together, and because I was traveling, I just had my wife take it downtown for me. And no worries, I said, "Look, just drop it off, do some shopping, grab lunch, it should be done." 10 a.m., my wife calls me. "They need your flight reservations." I told her, "I haven't made them yet. They specifically say on their website not to book flights until you get the visa." "Hold on," she said. She was talking to the clerk. "Yeah, I guess things have changed. She'll hold on to your application until you email her your flight info. Oh, and she's going to charge you another $30 for an expedite fee." "Hey, wait a minute," I said. "I mean, according to their website, I'm okay on their deadlines. I shouldn't need them to expedite." "Hold on," she said. "Yeah, I guess those deadlines have changed too." Now, unfortunately, I was only able to get a 1 year visa. Now, I got to tell you, if this visa expires before my next trip over to India, I think I'm going to send one of my staff in my place. I think I need to introduce some other Americans to the fine art of applying for visas.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's it. That's the end of Travel Commons podcast number 110. I hope you all enjoyed this podcast, and I hope you decide to stay subscribed. Check out the show notes for the music links. Also, check out the Facebook page for a bit of a point of view video from one of those fake Pamplona bull runs they're doing. They're running around in the U.S. They did it here in Chicago a month or so back, and I put the GoPro camera on the chest. So if you go to the Facebook page, I posted up a little bit, like a minute and a half of point of view video from that bull run. I don't know that it has anything to do with travel, but it's kind of fun. Anyhow, it's there if you want to take a look at it. You can actually hit the like button then if you like it. But always, if you have a story, a thought, a comment, gripe, the voice of the traveler, send them along. Text your audio file to comments, COMMENTS at travelcommons.com, or to MPeacock on Twitter. Write them on the Travel Commons wall on Facebook, or post them on the website at travelcommons.com. Thanks to everyone who has taken the time to send in emails, tweets, and to post comments on the website. And as always, I hope until we talk again, you have safe travels. Thanks for stopping by the Travel Commons. Bye now.
Home alone, life is hell. Strange bed in a lonely motel. But one thing can ease my mind. No home woman that I left behind. From California to Carolina, she calls me up and there's nothing finer. And when the tears start falling, crying into the phone, within my heart you'll find my pictures of you at home. No matter where life takes me, how many miles I've